This is a tape with Fred Naslund of 11407 34th Avenue East, Tacoma, Washington. This was done with Ruth Wett, Tacoma Public Library, on June 16th, 1976. This is a taped original.
My name is Fred H. Naslund, and I was born January the 31st, 1897, at Mineral, Washington. Mm-hmm. But before that, my folks, they lived in Tacoma. And my dad came to Tacoma first in 1890, and he worked for the Northern Pacific, bridge carpenter and different construction work. But during that time, there was always panics, and he'd be working steady for a while, and he'd be out of work. And when my mother came from Sweden in 1893, she and my older sister and older brother came at that time. Why, they lived on at 15th and Yakima in Tacoma, which was a nice district, and he was working steady at the NP, and there was a panic came on, and they couldn't pay the rent, so they moved up on back of K Street. At that time, they called that Nigger Tract. That was the old name, and there was a fellow that had been a Civil War vet, a black man that had homesteaded there, but he stayed there so long, and then he left, and there was a lot of squatters moved in there, and my dad bought a squatter out for $20, the shack, and they lived up there, and then they moved to Mineral in 1894. And then I was born up there. And it took 2 days to make it to Mineral from Tacoma with a horse and wagon and over the trails. And he bought out a homesteader, and our place was right where the town of Mineral is at now. We've got pictures to show that we were the only house right in the on the lake, on the south end of the lake where the town is. And then in 1905, why the Tacoma Eastern Railroad built in there, and the folks sold the land to the mills up there and sold the farm, and after that we lived up there and worked in the mills camps.
Well, was there a specific reason why your father moved him to the Mineral area?
Well, there were some other Swedish people that had moved up there, all strands and different people like that he knew from the old country. So he moved up there. Of course, he loved that lake because that was good fishing and it was a good deal. And at the same time, the arsenic mines there was prospects around there, different places, and there was work on building the roads, you know, country roads into the mines, and hard, heavy work. So he worked at that quite a bit of the time. Mm-hmm. And there was times that he would leave Mineral with a horse, pack horse, and go down into Puyallup Valley. They was picking hops those days down there. Any work they could do, why they would be working at it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Now, when you moved to Mineral, you say that there wasn't very many people around. Was it mostly homesteaders up in that area?
That's right. The people that had bought out railroad land. You see, too, they bought it from the railroad at that time, too, because the railroad, when they came in, like the Northern Pacific, they got every other section 30 miles on each side of the right-of-way. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I stayed up there, went to school and high school at Mineral, and then in the fall of 1915, why I came to Tacoma and started driving horses for Wells Fargo and Express, and I worked for the, then later I got to be an express messenger on the trains. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I worked out of Raymond, from Raymond to Maytown on a Puget Sound and Willapa Harbor Railroad. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And then I was down there, then I joined the Navy in June of 1917.
Mm-hmm. I was curious as to what kind of memories you had of Mineral when you were growing up. What was it like for you?
Well, it was ideal. It was good fishing and swimming. We were right close to the lake. We never knew. I and my brothers never knew when we couldn't swim. We could swim, seemed like always, because it was handy. My dad had a little place fenced in there for us where we could learn to swim, and fishing was wonderful. It was a good life.
when the mills came in, now I presume they're mostly lumber mills?
Yes, lumber and shingle.
I presume the population grew quite rapidly after that.
With the coming of the railroad coming in, then the population increased fast and it built up quick.
Mm-hmm. Were there a lot of immigrants that moved up into that area to work in the mills? Or
yes, there was a lot that way. A lot of Scandinavians moved into up there to work.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And there was Japanese worked at the mill too.
Do you know what kind of salary your family got for working in the mills?
Well, at those days, they were getting around $2, $2.25 for 10 hours.
Mm-hmm.
And before that, I guess when he first came to Tacoma in the 1890s, they was working about 12 hours in the mills down here in Tacoma.
Mm-hmm. Hmm. And let's see now, the school you attended was a small one.
It was a log schoolhouse. And it was a log schoolhouse right where they got the schoolhouse now at Mineral, on the same ground, right up on that hill.
Mm-hmm.
And this one teacher, she had all the grades in there.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Was schooling important for you? I mean, was it considered an important thing for you to finish high school?
Yes. Still, at the same time, at that time, you know, there was always that lure of getting away and getting a job, and you thought you knew enough, you know. So I didn't really finish high school. I left the last year.
Mm-hmm.
But I wished I'd have stayed, but I didn't. But that's the way they did. They wanted to work, you know.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And in those days, there was nothing like what they got now. Now they got a check on the children and the boys, how old they are. But in those days, you could say you was a lot older than you was to get a job, because there was no, you didn't have a social security number or anything like that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. The name Wells Fargo, yeah, of course, with all the Westerns and everything, really brings to mind a lot of rip-roaring kind of things. But I presume the work you did was mostly just in the Tacoma area.
Right in the Tacoma area down there. They delivered, they had horses in the wagon, and they would, a lot of them, and they delivered express. In those days, it was a parcel post came in 1912, but in 1915, it still hadn't taken over. They weren't taking as big a packages, and the express company was doing a big business, because they were shipping old clothes and material and things like that from the east out here to the stores.
Mm-hmm.
It was a big thing compared to what it is now, but it's all gone.
Mm-hmm.
With the railroads going out, that took care of the express company too.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. When you got out of school, when you came to Tacoma, did you just decide to come by yourself? Did you have any people to stay with?
Well, I had a brother-in-law that was living in Tacoma then, and he helped get me a job and got started.
Mm-hmm. What was Tacoma like for you?
It is a big city. We thought that was really something big, you know, because it's grown a lot since then. But and at that time now, Wells Fargo was down at the Milwaukee Depot. That was down there on 25th Street. And that was just like a little town of its own down there. They had a restaurant and hotel, and of course they had streetcars going there, but the people didn't move around as much in those days. Why, if there was anything doing on a Sunday, it was either Spanaway Park or Point Defiance on the streetcar to go.
Mm-hmm. Was that, I was curious as to what kind of entertainment, or did you have time for entertainment when you were working in those early years?
Yes, they had moving picture shows, and of course they were dimes and nickels and 15 cents to go to the movie in those days, and they was, flickers was a good name for them, because they weren't like they got them now.
Mm-hmm.
But that was big entertainment to
mm-hmm.
save enough so you could go a couple of times a week to watch in those days they always had serials in the movies, you know, so that you'd want to know how they come out, just like the soap operas now, you know, they just want to keep you carry you on, you know, keep you coming.
Mm-hmm.
And there was, I think the people was more friendly in those days, because they now everybody stays home and watches TV. They don't get out and know each other. those days, why there was always a dance at somebody's barn or friends, and every Saturday night there was doings like that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. How did you end up back on the railroad? Because I know that railroad played a part in your family, no matter where you went. Was there a particular urge to go to work on the railroad?
Well, yeah, that was a kind of everybody. You know what? When the trains came into Mineral, that was a big event of every day, is to go down to the depot to meet the trains coming in. Whether you was expecting to see anybody or not, why, we was always there when the train came in. Down the depot. And I had two brothers that was conductors on the Milwaukee. They worked there for a long time on the old Tacoma Eastern in the Milwaukee. And then after I got out of the Navy, why, the Wells Fargo and all of the express companies, they all became American Railway Express, because during World War I, the railroad was taken over by the U.S. Railroad Board, so that they run all the railroads, the government did in 1917 and 18 and 19. And all of the express, the Northern Express and the Great Northern Express and the American and all of those, they became the American, they joined together and they became the American Railway Express. And then 10 years later, they became the Railway Express Agency. Mm-hmm. And that was when, from there on, that they stayed that, and the railroads owned the express company, but they went out with the passenger train business.
Mm-hmm. Well, what kind of work did you do on the railroad?
I was express messenger. That is up in the express car, where you're handling baggage and express, and you're putting it off and handling the company mail, you know, that they send to their parts here. Mm-hmm. And they call them express messengers, and the railroads themselves, you handle the baggage, you know, for the passengers on the train on there too, and they call you as a joint train baggageman and express messenger.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You mentioned the railroad you work on, I think it was the Puget Sound and Willapa Harbor.
Yes. That was a little part of the Milwaukee Railroad that started at Raymond, and it run as far as Maytown. And then it connected with the Milwaukee there. But that's part of the Milwaukee Railroad now. Mm-hmm. Weyerhaeuser uses part of it down there now around McDonald for logging roads. There's no passenger train on it, but there's still some freight.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, when you went to get on the railroad, was it part of the Milwaukee at that time?
It was owned by them, just like the Tacoma Eastern that run from Tacoma to Morton. They owned it, but for quite a while, it was a little separate line, you know. The railroads were still expanding, and like that Puget Sound and Willapa Harbor, that was built by the Milwaukee, but they called it a different name. But now they're all incorporated into the Coast Division of the Milwaukee.
Mm-hmm. So when you applied, did you apply actually, you know, to the Willapa Harbor?
Right, yes.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. So you really, in a very short time, went pretty far away from your family, or...
Yes, you wanted to be on your own. And after I'd been in the Navy, when I got out of that in June of 1919, I worked a little while at home. Then I went down to Portland because they had the division big enough. They had taken in some of that, and I could work on the Southern Pacific and the Union Pacific and all of those railroads I hadn't seen or hadn't known, but I wanted to get down there. So I went down to Portland, and I worked on those railroads for a change. I worked down there until in 1923, and then I got the idea I wanted to go to Alaska.
Mm-hmm. I was curious about the war years in the Tacoma area. I really don't know what it was like during those years, did you sign up as a volunteer, or
yes,
was there ever a drive to get people, or was there, what were the attitudes of the people to
World War I? I'll tell you what, like with my age, I was 19 and 20 there, and well, we wanted to go to war right away. In fact, I joined in June of 1917, and I was afraid the war was going to get over before I'd get a uniform. But when I got in there, I was ready for it to quit any time. And I went through the training station at Lake Washington, right on the university, on Lake, right where they got their university hospital now.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
We had our training station, and that was where they had the fair in 1909, in the same place. We used some of their buildings for our courses and training.
Were there a lot of people signing up at that time?
Oh, yes. I think they drafted in June of 1917, and June the 5th, they started the draft, you know. They had them signed, registered. They had to draft more at the last, but at first there was a big influx of volunteers right off the start.
Mm-hmm. What made you decide, after living all of your life on land, to join the Navy?
I don't know, but then I hadn't seen too much of the sea, only Puget Sound, but I don't know, there's the Scandinavians, they're kind of strong for the water. They're sailors at heart, you know, and they're pretty good travelers, and that's what appealed to me, that I wanted to.
Mm-hmm. Well, did you ever get to Europe?
I left from, they sent us over to Bremerton in January of 1918, and we left on the USS Great Northern. That was a troop transport, one of the fastest. They was the Great Northern and the Northern Pacific was owned by them two railroads, and they run from Astoria to Frisco to compete with the Southern Pacific in the old days, you know, before that war, and they was fast passenger boats. Well, I got on that, and I went down through the canal, we stopped at Frisco, and then we picked up a bunch of German prisoners that they had picked up on boats in this country over here, or raiders and one thing and another that they'd captured, and we took them around through the canal into Charleston, South Carolina, and they put them off in there to a camp or to a concentration camp. Then we went up to New York, and then back down to Philadelphia Navy Yard, and they was going to put guns and things like that on the USS Great Northern, but then some other bunch got the measles, so they took the whole bunch of us off and put us in quarantine. And then after we got over that, they sent us down to Yorktown, Virginia, or Norfolk, just up there at Hampton Roads. And I got on the Utah. USS, that was a super dreadnought, you know, battleship. And then in July of 1918, we went to Bantry Bay, Ireland. And we worked out of Bantry Bay, Ireland. That was where we'd get oil and supplies. We done the convoy duty into Brest, France, back and forth.
Mm-hmm.
And we stayed, there was the Oklahoma and Arizona and Utah. And we had destroyers and others that was with us. Well, we kept doing that until the war was over in November of that year. Well, then President Wilson came over to France to settle everything on Friday, December the 13th. He came on the USS George Washington, which was a big transport. Well, we met him, and at the same time, there was a bunch of the fleet that had been up in Scotland to cut across the North Sea. That was the New York, Texas, Wyoming, Florida, and a bunch more. They all came down, and they escorted the president into Brest, France.
Mm-hmm.
And that was on the Friday the 13th, and then the next day, we paraded in Brest, and then a day or two later, while we pulled out for New York City.
Mm-hmm.
And we got to New York City on Christmas Eve, but we had to lay two out there at Fire Island because the Secretary of Navy wouldn't come up there and review us until the day after Christmas.
Mm-hmm.
So we was pretty much irked with him, but then that's all forgotten. See? And then from there, we was in New York about 30 days, and then we went to, they sent us down, of course, they was releasing a lot of them then, you know, there. And each day we was hoping that you'd get out and go home, you know. But they sent us down to Guantanamo Bay, Cuba. Mm-hmm. And that was a nice place to put the winter in. Boy, we got down there in the winter, you know, and you could swim all the time down there and go barefooted on the ship. And then when I'd been down there until in near the last of April, I couldn't wear my shoes. My feet had got a size bigger, and I've been a size bigger ever since.
Well, what kind of job did you do in the Navy?
In the Navy, mm-hmm. first, I was an electrician helper first, or a striker, they called it, but that's a helper. And because I'd, on this baggage car, you know, they had electric lights, and they had a dynamo in the baggage car. I used to run that, so I thought I knew a little bit about electric, but it didn't help nothing what I'd learned there, see. But anyway, that's what I was doing, and then and that you'd have to stand searchlight watches, these electrician strikers, up in the mast, you know. They'd tell you what number to turn your searchlight to, you know, if they wanted to put them on at night. And, boy, that was a breezy place up there. They had those collision mats, and you was all covered in there. And there was times there that wasn't a very nice place to be. But after the war was over, then we didn't have to stand those. Then they put back on in deck force, you know. Mm-hmm. That was on there. Then, we was in Guantanamo Bay, we went down into Martinique. That's a little French island in the West Indies, and there's Fort de France is the capital of it. Mm-hmm. And that Mount Pelee, that big volcano, in 1902, it killed pretty near everybody down there in that little town when it erupted. And I know we had postcards of it and everything else and scenes of it we bought. But that volcano was still smoking when we could see it, you know.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But did you, when you signed up, did you just expect to stay in for the war years?
Yeah, that was it, yes. Mm-hmm. For the duration, the Naval Reserve, you know. Mm-hmm. It was the, what I joined was the, what they call the Naval Militia of the State of Washington. And that's the same as the National Guard or the U.S. Naval Reserve, because they put us in the Naval Reserve and then they put us in the Federal Service, see?
Mm-hmm.
But they don't have that Naval Militia anymore. It's a Naval Reserve now.
Mm-hmm. Hmm. I didn't know that. Let's see. So when did you finally get out of the service?
Well, then we came back from Cuba. And I was best man in New York City when a fellow from kid from Mineral that I'd run into a line. I'd run into him in there, and he was getting married. He was a wireless operator stationed in New York City all the time. And so I was best man over there at Long Island City when they got married. And that was April the 30th, 1919. And then the next day we left for Cape Farewell, Greenland. Because those naval aviators was going to fly across the ocean. They flew from someplace in New York up to Cape Race, Newfoundland. And then from there, they was going to fly to the Azores and then to Portugal. Well, it dragged out a fair. They strung the Navy out because that was the first time they'd done any long hops like that. And we was up there around Cape Farewell, Greenland, man, the whales and the shippers and everything else, the whaling ships and the whales was thicker than the dickens. Those whales was just spotting, but it was a worse day than like this. We really never saw the sun up there at all. It was overcast and blowing, and that was in May.
Mm-hmm.
Then when we came back from there, May the 30th, we got back to or was coming into Norfolk, Virginia, and they posted the names. There'd be 12 of us going to Bremerton for discharge. That was a happy day. And then I got out June the 7th.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, what did you have in mind to do once you came back? Just to go back on the railroad, or?
Well, I don't know. You just, a lot of times you go as it comes. I went back on the railroad working then, see. But in the meantime, that first, before the 4th, I didn't go back. I went to work up there and worked in the mills until the 4th of July because we were supposed to report in 30 days to the railroad after you got out.
Mm-hmm.
So I wanted to stay home, so I stayed up there. Then I went back to work. Then I run out of Seattle to Hokin from Seattle on the Milwaukee, from Seattle to Hokum, and you stayed overnight. It was about a 6-7 hour run, but Jupiter, the expense of the way that we used one night in each place, and the wages weren't big, and had run into money quick, you know. Mm-hmm. I wasn't getting nowhere as we're there. But you know, in those days, you if when you're that age, you know, you're not worried about the future. You just live each day and go along with that, because I was having a good time, you know, at that time.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And plenty of work, you know. There's no trouble. You could quit one job. If they, those in the woods and sawmills, they could quit a job at noon and start right in at another place, because there was no unemployment insurance or pension rights or anything else like that that would keep a person on a one job like they do now. You know, now if somebody gets started like working at Boeing's, they got pension rights and one thing or another there. Why? They think twice or after they got a few years in there before they quit that job, or would, you know, or should anyway.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, then you said you went up to Alaska.
Yes, that was in 1923. Mm-hmm. I took a leave of absence from the railroad, and I thought I bought a round-trip ticket up there, and I was going to stay. I had 90 days off. I could be off. And I went up there, and jeep going up on the boat, I could have gone to work for the Alaska Railroad. I ran into some fellows there that was working, and they said I could get on there if I wanted to. But I went to this group that I'd met here that was going to go up there and work at a mining prospect. That was fairly close to Chichagof, on Chichagof Island this was. And that's north of Sitka, but further north and west. And that Chichagof mine was owned by a bunch of Tacoma people, Tacoma in Seattle. And the Rust, the fellow that started the smelter, he was the big owner in that. And they mm-hmm. had the Rust building. They call it now something else. It's on 11th and Pacific, the American First Federal or something like mm-hmm. that. And I worked up in there. And there is the first time I ever saved any money, you know, because they only took off Christmas and New Year. You worked every day other than that, Sundays and all. And it was the company boarding house and in the store. And if you could get whatever you needed, you didn't, and you could bank your what was left over all the time. And that was the first time wherever it was easy to save after you get about $500 saved.
Well, what did they mine up there?
That was gold and silver. And the concentrates, they sent them to the smelter down here, but that was the richest gold mine in North America.
Was it a big? Was it a big mine?
Yeah, good big mine. They hired about 250 men because there was shifts all the time, you know.
Mhm. Mhm. What kind of salary did you receive up there?
Up there, we was getting $5.50 a day, which was in those days. 23, 4, 5, and 6 was good wages.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'd done some salmon fishing, trolling too. And then some of us that worked in the mines, well, we got a contract from the company to take out mining timber down there on of course, that's all federal owned land in those days, so they paid stumpage. And we felled the timber and had a little donkey. We logged the donkey for them.
Mm-hmm. Hmm. Did you like it up there?
Yeah, I did. We've been back about 3 or 4 times. Our daughter and son-in-law now, they live in Juneau, but they both work for the state up there. He's with the fisheries department, and Margie, she works in the office up there. I think in a year or two, they'll retire and come down. We've got two grandsons, Eric and Carl Swanson. They both of them went to Bellingham there, but they're out now. And they're back up in Alaska working. Mm-hmm. Both of them are.
Mm-hmm.
And the oldest boy, he's no doubt, he's going to start at the UAW this fall to study in the fisheries like mm-hmm. his dad.
You sure had a change of climates from Cuba to Alaska. Did you find it hard to take the cold up there?
No. That southeastern Alaska is a lot like this down here.
Mm-hmm.
It rains a little bit more and a little bit more severe weather, but it's got, oh, that's beautiful country.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, okay, now you came back down. Was there a reason why you decided not to stay if you liked it so much up there?
No, I tell you what, I'd saved some money and was going to come down and for Christmas of 26. And my plan then was I was going to come down because I'd been talking with a fellow who was to go over to Gig Harbor and I was going to buy a trolling boat, take that back up to Alaska. But then my mother, she was still at Mineral and all. Stay a couple of months and go back in the spring. She says, well, that I ought to buy a chicken ranch and she'd keep house. And I could see that that's what she wanted. So then that's when I bought this place. It'll be 50 years now in between Christmas and New Year this year that I bought this place. So I've been here ever since.
But, a chicken ranch?
Yeah. I had chickens for a while here, but now I don't have them now.
Sort of adapted quite easily then to quite a few different kinds of things.
Yeah.
What was the Midland area like then?
Well, it's growing, but it's just about the same. The railroad went through there, you know, and that helped a lot. And over here on Polk Street, or on 104th, that there was a streetcar that used to run from there into Puyallup. But when I came, it only run as far as Woodland.
Mm-hmm.
But that's a lot of the people rode that streetcar, you know, to and from work that lived out here in town.
Mm-hmm.
But then we had the Woodland bus, you know, too.
So it was, in many respects, and it was sort of like a rural suburbs.
Yeah, that's.
Mm-hmm. Was there any kind of extensive farming out here at all? Or?
Oh, yes. There were some pretty good-sized farms out here. There was the Stilke Farm right down here on Waller Road. That was a big place. And, you know, you take it out this way, and then where they dropped down towards Puyallup, there was a lot of farming in the Puyallup Valley.
Mm-hmm.
But there's places now around Woodland where they had pretty good-sized berry farms, you know, raspberry and things.
Mm-hmm. Was a lot of it just to supply the local needs?
Well, the berry associations in Sumner, you know, like the Puyallup Sumner Berry Association, of course, I don't think they're as big as they are now, but they used to barrel the raspberries and strawberries and freeze them and put them up for the different ship, and they shipped them all over, you know, from that
mm-hmm.
way.
Mm-hmm. What about you and your chickens? Did you stay mostly in the Tacoma market, or?
Well, we belonged to the Washington Co-op, and they we sold to them. That was a cooperative deal, and we sold to them at that one time. They shipped eggs all over the country, you know. But now they're having their tough sledding right now. But gosh, and then the everything went fine in the chicken business until that depression came on in 29 and 30 and 31. That year of 31, I had the most chickens, and boy, if the eggs dropped about three or four times in a week, you know, and if they'd have laid two eggs, you couldn't have come out even on it. So pretty quick, why, everybody was going just about broke in the egg business.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, how did you get through the depression? Did you work at all, or did you?
Well, I worked where there was a chance, but I could raise. All my mother was keeping house, and I raised it. Well, I ate so much string beans and potatoes and chickens and things like that, you know, that I couldn't, whenever eating of string beans and chickens and eggs, I always thought of Hoover. He was the president then.
Well, I think that pretty much covers what I had down. I didn't have that much. I was curious if there's anything else that you remember about Tacoma that sticks in your mind, either about the people of the area or the way it's changed or something like that.
Well, it has changed because when my folks first came to Tacoma, of course, my mother couldn't speak English, but, you know, there were so many places where there was, in fact, Tacoma at that time, I would say probably when they came, 70% of the people was either Swedes, Norwegians, or Finns, or, you know, the Scandinavian country. And right now in this state, if the Scandinavian countries voted solidly, they'd run this state, you know, see? Mm-hmm. Well, in fact, now Evans is supposed to be part Norwegian. There's Magnuson and Jackson. They're Scandinavian, both of them.
Mm-hmm.
And so the amount of people, this must have been a lot like the places in the old country, and they like this Northwest.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, wherever there's hard work, you find the Scandinavians. They're always good, hard-working people.
Okay, well.